Welcome to Inside Independent Publishing. My name is Christopher Locke. I'm also the IBPA Director of Membership and Member Services. Okay, so IBPA created this podcast because we want to help independent publishers and author publishers succeed. And from what I've heard, a really great way to do that is to sell more books. So today's episode is all about tips for direct-to-consumer sales. Joining us on the podcast today is the founder of independent publisher Puppy Dogs and Ice Cream, Jason Katasi.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
Good.
All right. So you have a background in digital marketing. So not surprisingly, your independent publishing company has a lot of success with direct-to-consumer sales through digital advertising. And in particular, for example, like Facebook ads. So I want to start with Facebook. I've actually had a lot of our members that are publishers and author publishers tell me they've had difficulty with Facebook. So I'm interested that you didn't, that you've had success, and I want to find out what your special sauce is to make it all work. So one thing I wanted to start with is generally like a book's about to publish. How many ads do you run like on something like Facebook for that book that's publishing?
Oh man. I mean, at any given point, we probably have a thousand ads running. But most of that is multivariate testing, right? So you have 10 different, you know, if you take a look at the structure of a Facebook ad, you have ad text, that's the text at the top, then you have the image, and then you have the headline at the bottom. So, you know, if I'm running 10 different ad texts at the top and 10 different images, I'm at 100. If my math is good, you add 10 more headlines, you're at 1,000. So yeah. So thinking out loud, yeah, we're running thousands of ads actually in terms of those combinations. And you're really looking for the winning combination.
Yeah. It's so funny because I'm an author publisher and I've done ads and it's just embarrassing because I'm like, oh, I don't do 1,000 ads. Oh, what am I doing wrong here? Okay. So that's a start. It's the amount. It's that you do so many. And when you say success, so I guess you're watching the response in terms of like you do multiple ads and are you like seeing how many likes it gets? Like how are you seeing?
No. So one of the common mistakes that a lot of people make when they start advertising is they look for vanity metrics, right? So things that make them feel good. Oh, got a lot of likes. It got a lot of shares and all that's great, right? But at the end of the day, you really care about how many purchases. And Facebook is so good. If you take a look at it, sort of the funnel steps or the journey of a customer, how many people clicked on the ad, how many people read about the book, how many people went to the product page, how many people added to cart, how many people put in their contact, and then they put in their shipping, and then they put in their payment, and then they bought. Right. So you have all of these steps. And one of the things that's absolutely mind-blowing at how good these algorithms are, whether it's Facebook or Google or whatever, if you optimize higher up the funnel, right? So let's assume you optimize for add to cart. Facebook is trying to find the cheapest people that will add to cart. And there are things that just are still surprising to me today about like how many people add to cart and actually buy. So like one third of the people who are going to add to cart buy. So now Facebook is just optimizing to the cheapest people who add to cart, add to carters, because they're cheap, but they don't buy because the buyers are more expensive. Even if you take a step back from a conversion, a purchase to like ads payment info, that's literally like one step before, right? And generally we run about 90% if they get there, they put it in about 90% buy there. The performance isn't the same because Facebook is finding like the cheapest people, which means they don't buy. They get all the way to that last step and then don't convert, right? And so if you take a look, like imagine you have a cupcake shop and you're optimizing for people that just want a sample of the cupcake, or frozen yogurt might be better, right? So they're bringing in all these people that are sampling your free frozen yogurt in your little like white cup, right? But they don't buy. They're just coming in to get a taste. And those algorithms are so good that it finds the cheapest people to perform the objective that you have set. And so for us, it's always purchase, always, always, always. But then as you look through the funnel step is the way that we take a look at it. It's like, okay, you have a click on an ad, you purchase, but then you have to take a look at all of the steps back and optimize through that funnel. So how many people are clicking on your ad? Then how many people are reading about the product in what's called the pre-sale or advertorial or something along those lines, like why they should buy? or why it should be interesting to them. How many people are clicking through to the product page? And then off of that, how many people are going through and purchasing? And just because people read about your content or they're interested in it doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to buy. So you could have a lower click-through rate on a pre-sale, but have a way higher conversion rate, right? Versus a really high click-through on the pre-sale, but then nobody buys. They're not really sold. Like, you maybe drove their curiosity, but you just didn't get them to buy. So we look at all of the steps through that, you know, through the transaction, through the funnel, to really, you know, optimize everything. I mean, there's so many things to optimize. I mean, you can optimize the color of a button. You can optimize what the button says, add to cart, order now, look inside, learn more. Like, all of these things at scale really, really start to matter. That makes sense?
Yeah. But, and what are you using to look at all those metrics to see that? Because, like, I've done Facebook ads, but I've never seen that, like, you know, every step of the way. Are you using some other program to see all those steps?
So this is I don't want to get too much off topic, but you have this whole iOS update. And so there's things that we're doing now that are very different than what we did in April and May before that update really, really happened. But Facebook, you know, if we kind of look historically, Facebook will give you all the steps through the funnel. You know, if you're on Shopify, which is just the easiest, you can set up your view and Facebook will tell you how many people viewed the product, how many added to cart, how many went to checkout. It'll tell you all that data and then the cost for each of those.
Okay. So then, so something like an e-commerce site like Shopify is kind of how you kind of keep track of some of that stuff too. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Shopify is by far the easiest.
Okay. By far. And I'm interested in like the ads you're doing. So one thing I'm interested in is like, in terms of the ads, the amount you do before a book's published, while a book, at like the day that's published, and then afterward, kind of like, do you kind of even all that out? Or are you like more heavy on the before it's published or after? Or like, how does that all time out?
Great question. So, you know, if you take a look at our, and I'll answer this in two parts. If you take a look at the general thesis, you know, our whole mantra is kids' books with a purpose, which really translates to kids' book with a why. Why should I buy this book? And I think that a lot of people think that because a book is cute or good, that it's just going to move. And that's not really the case with direct response, right? So maybe that's the case if your book is sitting on a shelf at Barnes or in Costco and, you know, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get some muffins or bottles of wine or whatever it is at Costco, you're pushing down the aisle, you see the book, it's cute, you pick it up, you look through it and whatever, right? But the noise to signal ratio is very low, right? When you're in retail. But if you are online, the noise to signal, you know, signal to noise ratio is very, very high, right? So you're on Facebook and you're looking at, you know, articles on Biden and Trump or the Padres or Chargers or puppies and babies or meat, whatever, right? How do you all of a sudden stand out from the crowd? And really what it comes down to, independent of selling books, it doesn't matter what you're selling, whether it's health and beauty or lead gen for refi or auto insurance, whatever it is, you have to figure out why that thing that you're trying to sell or get the app or the action that you're trying to get the people to perform is interesting to them, right? And so the first step is you have to figure out who's your avatar, right? Why do they care? And then as you paint that avatar in your head, then you write ad copy and you write a pre-sale speaking to that specific audience. And so when you hit them with something, they're like, oh, this is about me, right? This is interesting to me. Now you get them to move off of Facebook through the scroll and into your funnel or into your e-commerce store to really transact. So let's assume for a moment that we have a book that has a really strong hook, a really strong why. Then the next thing, just like the funnel steps, and I think a lot of people don't do this. When we started, I don't know if anybody's doing it today, but when we started, we cover test. That's the very first thing. So if you don't have a cover that clicks, you're not going to, that book isn't going to move. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing, you know, kids books. It doesn't matter if you're doing romance novels. It doesn't matter if you're doing cookbooks. You know, if you're doing a cookbook on baked goods, you're running chocolate cake, you're running a cupcake, you're running a lemon bar, they're not all going to perform the same. And so we look at what's the background image that works. What's the headline? I mean, one of the things that we've had a lot of success with is what we call subheadlines. So imagine you have this great book called, you know, about apples, called Apple. But then you had a sub headline that's like, that talks about, let's see, apples, you know, a brilliant way for your kids to learn gratitude, just right below it. Without that line, they just see Apple's cute book. They have no reason why it's important. They have no idea why they should buy that book. And that's done very, very, very well for us. You know, I think one of the cover tests that was so mind-blowing to us, we have a book and there's a little girl sitting on a hill and there's a cloud that is shaped like a heart, you know, sort of right in front of her. And on one side of the book, there was a tree just kind of flanking the image. And when you look at a cover, the most important thing is you need a single focal point because it's the easiest way to get somebody to stop. If you have a lot of stuff going on and your eyes moving around, it's harder to focus. And the image is what gets you to stop than the ad text you read. And that sort of drives why you should buy it. So we tested a couple things. The two big drivers for us was one, instead of one tree on one side, we added another tree on another. Mm-hmm. So now you had two trees that basically dropped our cost per lead when we were testing covers to half. Because now all of a sudden the trees were flanking the girl in the middle with the cloud heart right in front of her. Mm-hmm. And then we tested running like, this is where I should go, you know, this is where I try to remember science in elementary school. But you had the big puffy cloud, right? The cumulonimbus. And then I forget what you called the thinner wispy one. The thinner wispy one dropped our lead cost by a third. So now I made two changes that dramatically dropped our cost per click and our cost per lead. The interior of the book was the same, right? And so we cover test all of these things. And one of the things that we're about to spin up is a cover testing solution as well. So what, you know, we had almost 32,000 people submit their books to us in the last 18 months. I pulled the number for another reason about a month ago. And I was like, I can't publish, you know, I can't publish 1% of those is, you know, 300 books. Like I can't do that. So how do we help those authors really sort of figure out the cover tests and what works and what doesn't? And so we have a new product coming out to really just sort of help authors in terms of give us your cover test. We'll run the cover test for you and then we'll give you the results because that's the most important thing, right? You have to have a cover that clicks to get people to stop and be engaged. And it's probably the easiest fix.
Well, it sounds like with this cover test, because normally I'm thinking of a test as like you have the two different images side by side and it's like a poll or something. But you just post one and then you just watch the metrics of what people click on.
That's another very, very common mistake, right? So if I give you two images and I'm like, tell me which one works the best, you are now digging into both of those images and you're really trying to pay attention, figure out which one's going to work and which one doesn't. I'm not interested in that. I want to run, everybody gets one image and then see how that one image does with the world, really, right? We literally run these ads, male, female, 25 plus go, US. And I'm looking for the ones that have the highest click-through rate, that have the most engagement, that have the most, and then the most leads on a pre-order.
Interesting. Well, I wanted to ask, it sounds like you do so many ads, so only if you're comfortable sharing, I'm just interested for other indie publishers, it sounds like your advertising budget's gotta be pretty high. I mean, you're doing all these ads. So
we spend on average between $1.5 million and $2 million a month. So we spend a lot.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. All right, well, it's paying off clearly. So that's
most
amazing.
Most days.
All right, well, I'm sure all of our members are like, okay, great, I'll just start doing that. But I'm sure there are things they can do to scale that down, but still, it seems like the more ads, the better, and then you just do a lot at a time. And then one question I had was, because we've talked a lot about Facebook, so what about like other platforms like social media platforms like Twitter, TikTok, Instagram? Are you doing ads on those too, or have you found Facebook?
Yeah, so in Instagram we do as well. We've actually found for us for kids' books, if you take a look at the highest value customer, and we've tested everything, but for us in kids' books, the highest value user is what we call grandma traffic, right? Because a mom can have 10 kids, she's buying one copy of a book. A grandma can have three sets of grandkids, one kid each, and she's buying three copies of the book. So the average order value is higher. So we really focus on grandma traffic. Now we do a lot of stuff with moms as well. And when you take a look at the different traffic sources, you also need to think about how those users behave on those traffic sources. And so if you look at the two best traffic sources today, it's Facebook, not Instagram, but just Facebook and YouTube. And the reason is because people who are spending time on those two channels, those channels replace TV. You have committed a lot of your time to just reading, digesting content, whatever. You're focused. You're more apt to buy. You're more apt to spend. And so if I think about when I'm using Instagram or when people use Instagram, you know, Chris, maybe you're in the car waiting for your kids to get out of school. You're on Instagram for 3 minutes. They pop in, you're out, right? It's these micro pieces of time, which doesn't give you enough commitment in general. I mean, look, they'll work at different levels, but it doesn't give you enough time to really just sort of jump in, right? And commit. Now, if you're selling something, you know, years ago, we sold a product that was targeted at younger women. And there you get a lot of reach in there. Instagram did better for us. And so did, you know, Snap and TikTok and et cetera. But generally for us, it's Facebook and YouTube.
YouTube, which is interesting because so Facebook, you can get away with doing an image, but YouTube is a video platform. So now you're, I'm assuming, doing video production, and that then costs more. And I'm wondering how high tech, is it like a book trailer? Like what are these videos then you're doing?
Yes. So the best videos are like the selfie videos. Even on Facebook, it's, you know, we have like these full-on animated read-alongs, we have the book trailers, all of these things. And really what we have found, if we look at Facebook, an image will do a lot better than video. Your click costs are way cheaper. So if you have a really strong image, you get somebody to stop, you can read the story in the ad text, which if you're in the kids book business, you can probably write, I hope. And then so the copy is really what sells them. So the image is what gets them to stop and the copy is what gets them to move through. So if you take a look at how to use YouTube, there's a million different ways and strategies, right? So one of them can be, you run an animated whatever about the book in a trailer, and those do okay, right? But if you run just something that's short and engaging, whether it's a person talking, I'm sure all of you guys have seen these videos of people holding a phone while they're walking and talking.
Yeah.
Those videos do great. And you're like, dude, there's no production value. They're done on their iPhone. The reason they're walking instead of sitting here like me is because you have stuff going on and it just seems a little bit more engaging and those sorts of things. And so, you know, you have to, when you look at marketing anything, you just have to look at what the goals are of each step. And so an example is years ago, my dad's retired, lives in Scottsdale and sells houses. And I built a lead gen funnel for him and delivered too many leads. He actually could not handle it. And so he called me and told me to stop because I was sending too many leads.
Too much money, stop. Yeah.
But what was interesting is I'm like, Dad, what is the goal of like a postcard? So like the what do they call it? The title companies, like after you sell a house, like they'll, you know, it's a goodwill, they'll send out a postcard on your behalf to everybody in the neighborhood. I was like, what's your goal of a postcard? He's like, it's to sell a house. I'm like, it really isn't actually. Like, take a step back. What's your goal? And he's like, to get a listing. I'm like, nah, that's not it either. The goal of a postcard is to get somebody to reach out. Right? That's it. And then after they reach out, what's the next step? Well, they reached out, I got their email, I got their phone number. You know, my dad goes, if I get them on the phone, I can close them. I'm like, okay, cool. Then your goal is to get them on the phone. So take a look back at, you know, all of the steps and truly what's the goal. So when you look at YouTube, for example, the goal is to entice somebody to really sort of filter the traffic, find the right person who's interested in what you're selling. And then get them to click through to learn more about your product on a landing page, right? And there's a million WYSIWYG, you know, what you see is what you get, sort of drag and drop editors. So there's no coding involved. They're really easy. And they read about the book and they read about why they should buy the book. And so, and then when you take a look at what happens when they hit the landing page, it doesn't matter what you're selling. There's basically five steps. So, you know, when you think about the avatar, what's the pain point? right? So find out, like, why do they need to read the book, or why should they read the book? And then you offer them, you know, the solution, right? So I bet you're looking for a book that teaches your kids how to help with anxiety, mm-hmm. right? Do your kids have anxiety? And you're like, yes, they do. Great. Well, we have this book written by a child psychologist, and she has a bunch of easy steps, whatever. And then you have to overcome their potential objections. Don't wait for them. Get in front of them, right? Don't worry. Our books are printed in the US. You don't like them. You know, you can, you know, there's free returns, whatever it is, any sort of reason that they wouldn't buy, get in front of them and overcome those objections. Hmm. And then there's some type of scarcity, right? So, hey, I only have 1,000 copies in my garage. Get it today, or they're, you know, they're gone for months till I, you know, till I get some new ones. Hmm. And then close. And then what a lot of people also do too, is they put in UGC, user generated content, testimonial, something like that, because then people can see that other people like the book. What did they think? Those sorts of things. And those steps are what we use to sell everything, including books.
Yeah. Well, so, and you had a really great Publishers Weekly article about y'all. And I wanted to see, you also do Google display ads. I haven't done those, so I'm interested to see, is there anything that's different about those types of ads? Or are you just all running all these at the same time? How do you do those?
We run them all at the same time. Facebook by far is the best performer. So if you're going to start screwing around, start there. Google is more expensive, but it has way more reach. But it just doesn't, the algorithm just doesn't know the audience as well as Facebook does. And, you know, you've seen the Google display ads everywhere, right? It's on the blogs. It's, you know, it's all over. But one of the things that really matters with Google is the publisher. Where are they appearing? So if my Google ad appears on a site that's like greatkidsbooks.com or something like that, the audience for that website is more likely to convert than somebody that's appearing on Motor Trend, for example. And when we take a look at, you know, sort of how do those the placements work on different publishers. And there's other places to run. It's called Native, but you can run on Taboola or Outbrainer, the two really big ones. That's like the super advanced one. So I would advise not to test there. But the website that your ads appear on basically helps segment who your audience is and whether or not they're more likely to buy. Like, we found that, this is so wild to me, but home and garden type websites click really hard. They don't convert. Entertainment websites like celebrity stuff, like People Magazine or Us Weekly, those are great. Like, it's wild that those work, but I'm like, oh, Home and Garden, kids books, those sorts of things. They just don't perform as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it sounds like data is like, that's your thing. Like, you just data. So I think mm-hmm. we should recommend to people that however they can track all this stuff, like that's one of the goals that you want to look for, is always then look at the data. So I wanted to then move to your website, because I read that 75% of your revenue is through your website. And I found that interesting. You might know better than me, but that sounds like higher than maybe your average indie publisher. I was assuming a lot of sales would be through retail sites such as, you know, Amazon or maybe bookstores or barnesandnoble.com or something. So yeah. Do you think that's because of your digital advertising? Are you sending all of them to your site, or
yeah.
why is that so?
I mean, we send everybody to our site. You know, I think one of the big problems. I mean, I understand why the big publishers do it. I guess I don't really understand why the smaller ones don't. But they'll just send you straight to Amazon. Hmm. But now they're Amazon's customer. Like, you don't own that customer. Right? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And yes, Amazon can fulfill it and whatever. Okay, cool. Put in what they call a squeeze page. So like a short bridge page where they put in their email or something. So now you can just, you know, email them afterwards. I think our average cost per email, I think this was in the last presentation I did with you guys, but it was like 0.000. I think it's like 5 zeros and a 6 cents. Hmm. Like, it's so cheap to send email. And so, you know, particularly for those who want a series of books or they want to sell multiple books, build your audience. Right? Because then when you have another book or something else, if they just bought your first book and they liked it, let's assume, they're more likely to buy your second one. So you already have that audience. Otherwise, if you put up your next book on Amazon, you have to reacquire that customer. That's expensive, mm-hmm. right? So once you have that customer, capture them and then push, you know, and then push them through. Keep them, you know, make them your customer.
Right. Yeah. I think the only thing that people might be concerned about is then, you know, so I don't know if you have a distributor, but if they come to your website,
we sell. Okay. What was the question?
Well, so then that means you are distributing the books. Like, so how do you handle all of that? Like that, there's all those sales and mailing them out. Like you.
Yes. So we print in bulk and we have different printers depending on hardcover, paperback, how fast do we need them? Sort of the size, everything for us is printed domestically. But there's other solutions out there. You know, I think, you know, I'm sure everybody on this call knows Ingram. You can integrate Ingram with your Shopify store. It takes a little bit of work and some coding, or maybe you just send them to Amazon anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Where you have a company like Ingram that's just running POD, but capture that user on the front end. Mm-hmm. You just paid for them, get them, mm-hmm. right? Here's another wonderful thing about kids' books that I think is quite frequently overlooked. At the end of the day, people that are buying kids' books want a physical copy. It's one of the reasons we got into that space. So you can give away PDFs or digital whatever all day long for free. You know, if grandma really likes the book, she's not dropping the PDF on a USB drive and putting that in somebody's stocking.
Yeah.
So, hey, here's the book. Like, get a free copy of the book. Take a look, read through it. You like it? Great. If you like it, here's the link to Amazon. Mm-hmm. Right? That's a great, very, very basic funnel. Right? So just get the book, read it. You like it. Run a little follow-up email sequence, and this stuff can all be automated. So you only have to do it once, and then you can track, you know, whether or not they clicked and bought, et cetera. But it's, I mean, that's just another funnel strategy.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We've mentioned Amazon a few times now, I read that you do not advertise on Amazon, and I thought that was very interesting because I totally get the idea of your ads on, let's say, Facebook, and you send them to your website. But if someone's already on Amazon, it's interesting then that you are not then like, and then buy my book here. So I'm just wondering then the thought process behind choosing to do Facebook ad sales for you.
Yeah, so about 20% of our revenue comes through Amazon. You know, we screw around a little bit with advertising, but I mean like very, very, very little. Those sales are for people that go through the funnel. They say, we're interested in the book. I'm just going to go to Amazon. I'm just going to order there. I'm like, okay, great. Go pay more, right? So if you buy from us, if you buy like 3 books, you get a discount, whatever. So that's how we undercut Amazon's price, because you can't do that with Amazon unless you're running FBA, but there's some other stuff around books and doing that. And the thing to consider too is that how do you really get a lot of scale out of online marketing? So when we started, we had no major competitors to speak of running direct to consumer for kids books. And people are like, that's not true. I can go to Target and I can buy, and I can go to Amazon and buy. And I'm like, yeah, but you're in market. It is Tommy's 5th birthday. He likes fire trucks, 5-year-old boys, fire trucks in Amazon. And you see all the covers, where the cover starts to matter again, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's a race to the bottom. You're like, oh, well, this book's 18. This book's 10. I think the cover's cute. It's a race to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And now you have to compete with all of the other books. For us, we focus on what's called cold traffic. So again, it goes back to the people looking at Biden and Trump and the Padres and whatever. Mm-hmm. And they see an ad and they're, what is this? And they click and they read more about the book and, you know, sort of the steps that I discussed, and they go, this is really interesting. I'm going to buy. Hmm. So most of our customers were not in market. They did not wake up this morning and say, hey, I need to buy a kid's book today because it's Tommy's birthday. Mm-hmm. They were doing something else and they saw something that piqued their curiosity. It hopefully solved a problem for them, which could be a birthday, by the way. Maybe they were going to wait until 2 weeks before Tommy's birthday, but here we are a month before their birthday. And so they're going to buy today. Mm-hmm. And that's what really gives you a lot of scale. Otherwise it just doesn't work that well. You just don't have the scale. Now, Amazon's got a lot of reach and a lot of scale. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of, you know, controlling your margins, we make way more through our Shopify store, and I have the customer. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You do not have that on Amazon at all.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting, because we get a lot of members who ask a lot about Amazon ads. And so it's interesting to then sometimes be able to say to them, well, maybe you don't need to be doing those. That's another way of thinking about it. So I wanted to also ask about your mailing list. I mean, you have like 1 million names on your mailing list, which is incredible, and I know how important those are. So I wanted to see, well, first off, how you garnered them, although it sounds like by sending them to your website, you get people to sign up. But
Correct. Yeah, those are buyers. So you buy, we have you.
And I guess then, do you have incentives like on your site that say, if you let us add you to our newsletter, we will give you a free book or something? Or how does that work?
Yeah, so there's different funnel strategies, right? So, I think it goes back to that, like, giveaway of the digital one is really interesting, right? Like, try before you buy kind of a thing, where it's just, you know, before you buy the blue shirt you're wearing, hey, here it is, try it on, see if you like it. And if you do, then go through and transact. Imagine shopping for clothes where you couldn't try it on, right? That becomes way harder. And if you look at sort of e-commerce with clothes too, you know, you start to see a bunch of objections. Am I large? Am I an extra large? Is it, you know, what's the fit and finish? What if I don't like it? What's the return policy? Like, all of these things. And so for us, I'm like, here, read it. Look, tell me if you like it, like try it on. And if you like it, you're going to transact.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's definitely helpful. And I also then real quick want to ask about all those newsletters you send out. So, I mean, how often do you send them? Like once
daily?
We send daily.
Yeah. So one of the big misconceptions with mail, and I've had this conversation many times. We're like, do not send daily. You know, I don't want an email daily, like don't send me daily. Mm-hmm. The fact is sending daily makes more money, and really, like, you got to send daily. Your unsub rate. So people are like, oh, they're going to unsub from the, unsubscribe from the list. It happens. Mm-hmm. The unsub rate is the same if you send once a day, twice a day, or once a week. It doesn't matter. Unsub rates are the same by day even. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the business to make some money, right? And look, maybe it's a passion project and whatever, but at the end of the day, you need to make some money to grow your business, to print more books and whatever, send daily. Now, if those people aren't engaging, they're not opening, they're not clicking, you know, then you can move them to different frequencies in terms of, you know, whether it's weekly or monthly or new releases or whatever, but stay in front of your customer or they're going to forget who you are. And so, for example, today, let's assume you publish a book and you just have one book. That's it. That's all you got. Mm-hmm. And you don't mail them again for 3 months. Mm. Do they remember who you are? They don't. So what can you do along the way to keep those people engaged? I don't know. So maybe it's a lot of work to send daily. Don't send daily then. Send weekly. Give them an update. I'm working on a new book. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a screenshot of the, you know, take a shot of your computer of the sketches your illustrator is doing, or here's what it's about. Or something as basic as here's what's going on in my life today. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is you build a tribe. You build those people that feel like they have a connection with you and they want to learn more and they want to know about you. But it's really, really important. It doesn't matter what you're selling. You have to stay in front of that customer to just remind them who you are. Right. Look at Instagram stories, and I'm sure a bunch of people here follow a bunch of different authors, and a bunch of different authors post daily on stories, just random stuff, what they're doing with their kids, what they made for dinner. You feel like you're part of their tribe. You feel like you're getting to know them, right? And what's going on in their life. And that is really, really important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. And it's just very interesting to hear that, because I do get a lot of that people saying, I don't want to bother them. You know, I don't want to push too hard, you know, and make them feel like I'm, you know, just shoving my books down their throats. So,
I'll give you a great example. About 2 months ago, the woman running our email stuff was like, I don't know. She's on the email team, but she's like, I don't know. Maybe we should just mail once a week. And I was like, okay, cool. So we do about $5,000 a day in revenue off of email, off of campaigns. So let's not. I'll give you the rope here to, you know, cut you some slack here and let you do your thing. Let's not mail all week. Let's mail on Friday and Sunday and see how much money it makes. Well, 7 times 5 is $30,000. Yeah. We mailed that weekend and we did like 12.
Right.
So which one are you going to do?
I'm going to make more money. That's it. I'm emailing everyone every day. Even if I have nothing to say, that's, I'm just, hey, I still exist.
And look, if they're not interested, you know, if they're not interested, they can change their email preferences, right? Or they can unsub. Look, some people are terrified when we start an email. It's like, I don't know, all these people are unsubscribing. They're just not interested in the content you're sending. Mm-hmm. right? Or they just don't want it. And that's fine. Like, get rid of them. Mm-hmm. Like, then that's not the channel they buy on. Mm-hmm. And so if they're not buying off of email, they're not engaged, they want their email, you know, all the emails they get super clean, everything, fine. So be it. That's not their preferred method of purchasing.
Yeah.
And so just stop mailing them.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end here. I just can't tell you how much I appreciate I think this is something that people really, they always want to sell more to customers. They want to make more sales. You have such a very very distinct way of doing this digital marketing. It's just really interesting to learn kind of the way that you focus on like all that data. So I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you for sharing that with people. It's so important. That's what we're a community to help other indie publishers. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm grateful for you to, give everybody else, you know, kind of like a little in on how you're doing it and how you've been so successful at it.
Yeah, I think, you know, sort of in closing remarks here, I'll leave you guys with this. There's a couple things I think that any new author should really start to do. I think one, make sure you cover test your books. So if we, you know, if we on our, you know, our internal team or you know, when we were hiring illustrators to make some books internally, which is how we started, we asked for more than one cover. Give me multiple covers. I'm going to test them, right? And usually the illustrators just using the same assets they already have and sort of restructure them and test them and see what happens. Test your titles, right? It's not a lot of work. They won't charge you a lot more money to do it, I promise. Well, I don't know who everybody uses, but it shouldn't cost you a lot more money. And the second thing is just build your tribe. Build that email list. That is the most critical and the most important. And so everything that you should do should drive towards building your list. Where they transact is up to you. So they capture an email, send them to your Shopify store, send them to Amazon, send them wherever you want, but build your list and build your tribe, because the people who are really loyal will help support you and grow your business and share your stuff with others. And it doesn't take a lot of money it takes some time, but you know, on Facebook, spend $10 a day. Right. And so spend $10 a day, let it run for a week. You got four different covers. See what's happening. See which ones are working better. But you don't have to spend big numbers to test. You just, so low budgets and time.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Well, so everyone, please make sure to check out Puppy Dogs and Ice Cream's website. So Puppy Dogs, you can spell it out. It's puppydogsandicecream.com. So check that out. And also make sure to subscribe to this podcast. Every last Thursday of every month, we have an episode drop. So please check us out. And again, Jason, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. This is great stuff. I was taking mental notes for myself, and I'm going to work on spending $1 million. Now I know how to spend it, at least, when I get it.
Great. Thank you so much, Christopher.
Yeah, thank you, sir.